section of our portfolio, especially with the recent accidents, which are not so recent, just that there's been much focus, but on almost on continuous basis, we have this challenge of accidents and deaths. And let's then hear what we have in place to try and deal with this, and perhaps what will help us is to understand the nature of some of these accidents. I remember the last time we spoke about them was when there was an accident at Northern, for instance. We wanted to understand whether it was a human error or whether it was a seismic event or any natural kind of a disaster. We understand there are things we cannot do anything about or which are beyond our control, but we can do something. But there are those which fall squarely on us humans, whether through machinations or simple negligence. So let's get a picture so that we are able to tell public out there how gloom or how better the picture is going to be going forward, and what has been the trend, particularly in the last, say, 12 months, 6 months, comparatively speaking. Mr. Kaza.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. I bring with me my management team, both on the health and on safety, and we prepared this presentation to cover a number of themes addressing the safety aspect, as the Chairperson has indicated, and also looking at health, the wellness program, and looking at capacity issues within the inspectorate in carrying out its legislative mandate of protecting health and safety of workers at mine. So that's broadly how I'll go about this presentation. But to start the presentation, I'd like to say that, you know, unsafe work, first of all, leads to human tragedy and human suffering. And it often takes its toll on individuals, their families, their communities, and even society. And when you look at it from a business perspective and also economic perspective, it leads to reduced productivity and reduced competitiveness. And often it works against government's effort to reduce poverty, to create employment, and also to maintain sustainable economic growth. And I think as a country, in 1996, the Mine Health and Safety Act was promulgated, a very progressive piece of legislation that bestows certain responsibilities and duties on employers, on employees, and on the state, because the three stakeholders have a role to play, South Africa being a signatory to ILO. ILO prescribes that countries need to work in that tripartite environment, and I think it's something that needs to be nurtured, supported, and really put to good use to improve health and safety in our country. If you look at employees have a duty to protect their lives and the lives of their fellow workers, and at the same time to refuse to work in dangerous areas. And if there are problems, because they are often there at working places, they need to report to the inspectorate ask the inspector to conduct investigation on certain areas to make sure that we fix the problem before they lead to accidents. Employers have a clear responsibility to do risk management to protect the health and safety of people working in their employ. So they have clear standards that they need to comply to. And the state obviously needs to bring about health and safety standards and monitor compliance to those standards. So I thought I must start at that level and really clarify the different roles that the different stakeholders play. Next slide. The next slide really gives us a profile of South African economy. Our economy, to a greater extent, its development depended so much on the mineral sector, and it continues to do so, with a contribution to the gross domestic product of 7% direct and 15% indirect contribution. And it's a significant contributor to employment. I mean, 500,000 employees direct to the mining sector, and accountable for 30% of our stock market capitalization. Our mining sector, our mining environment varies from deep level gold mining with its associated risk, intermediate mining, and surface operations. And, you know, when you look at mining is really a conflagration of risks. And you, when you illustrate, I mean, if you have a nuclear plant, for example, there, you know what can happen. And it's often easier to put in controls and to monitor them. But when you look at mining, a lot of things can go wrong. Explosives, rail transport, shafts, fall of ground, issues related to health. So it's really an intersection of risks, and they are changing at all times. And so it makes it a very, very challenging area to deal with. So I want to focus on safety, to see how we have done as a country, and talk about what needs to be done. When we look at the past 2 years, just comparing health and safety performance, we can see when we look at the total, at the bottom there, it shows us that our rates have remained the same, 2005 to 2006 and 7. There was no improvement. And I'm saying no improvement because in 2005, you know, 2003, the council set targets for improvement to say we need to improve by 20% year on year to reach international benchmarks. And what we have seen is that we didn't get that improvement in the last year. Things sort of remained the same. The previous year, I think 201 people were killed in 2005, and 2006, 199 people were killed in our industry, really leaving the fatality rate at the same level, 0.2%. And we can see there with gold regressing by 10%, but we registered an improvement of 21% on the platinum sector. The coal sector also regressing by 23%, and a substantial improvement on the diamond sector. And it's important sometimes to look at these figures, look at the actual numbers, because this rate really depends on how many people are employed in the sector. And effectively what is happening now is that the number of people who are killed in the gold sector is going down. But because we're looking at the rate, it appears to be increasing, because people are moving from gold into platinum. So it reduces the number of workers in the gold sector, and as a result, you see the rate increasing. But if you look at the numbers, that seems to be a downward trend. If you look there, 2006, 7 more people were killed in comparison to 2005. And platinum, 7 less people were killed. diamond sector 3 less coal, 3 more people were killed, and in total really upping the figure by 23%. So you can see that the percentage is really responsive to the number of people in that particular commodity. If it's too many people, you don't see much change. But if there's less people, the increase seems to be... I mean, only 3 more people in the coal sector led to a 23% regression. So I thought I must just talk to the rates, because this rate sometimes don't give an accurate or a true reflective picture of what is happening. Next slide. The next slide focuses on injuries. And we can see the coal sector... 39% increase on injuries. And injuries are a major concern, because injuries can lead to disability and inability of people to continue to earn income. And we're focusing our attention in reducing the level of injuries in our industry. We'll talk about the strategies going forward. But in overall, injuries in the last year increased by 2%. And it was mainly because of underreporting in 2005 in the coal sector that was picked up and rectified. And we see it there with a 39% increase. Next slide. This slide basically just summarizes the tables. We didn't get an improvement of the 20% that we set. And currently, when we look at the figures, currently where we stand, we need to improve our fatality rate by 33% year on year to be where we want to be in 2018 to improve our figures. Next slide. This graph, they give us a historical context, but it's really the 2 years, 2005-2006. And we can see generally in all the commodities, there's that downward trend. We can see there that generally there's improvement in our safety performance. The graph that you see there, where we seem to be having problem, is the gold. And I've explained it earlier, it's because we're talking about rates. Although the numbers are going down, the actual numbers of people dying in the gold sector, but because it's rates, movement of employees from gold to platinum leads to an increase in rates, even if there's an improvement. So we can see that trend. We'll share the current figures at the end of the presentation of this year. Next slide. The safety classification. Really, it helps us to see what are the main agents, what causes death and injuries in our mining sector. And when we compare 2005 and 2006, we can see that the biggest cause, I mean, from the Lyon Commission, historically, the biggest cause of fatalities in our mines has been fall of ground. And 2005-2006, we see it sort of remained at the same level. And in fact, when we look at the figures for this year, there is an improvement of about 44%, an improvement, reduction in the deaths in our mines caused by fall of ground. The machinery is becoming a problem. We can see there was a sort of 100% increase in fatalities caused by machinery, because we see, particularly maybe on the coal is getting more and more mechanized, you know. People interfacing with machines, and these machines leading to accidents. But in general, in terms of the agencies, there was an improvement of 3% and 4% on the injuries. On the fatalities, there was 3%. Next slide. Now, focusing on the health. On the health side, I mean, the legislation requires mine employers to do a risk assessment to really determine, when we run this operation, what are the things that can lead to ill health. And once they've done that, then say, in this area, people will get, say, noise-induced hearing loss, there's too much noise. Those hazardous areas, people who are working there need to be put under medical surveillance program, which means every year or every 3 years, depending on the outcome of this risk assessment, there needs to be biological monitoring. A doctor needs to examine people to see that their health is not deteriorating. And in situations where health is deteriorating, they report to the inspectorate, wherein investigations are conducted to make sure that the conditions improve. And, you know, the problem with health is really that, just go back to that slide, the problem with health is that the results you see today really comes from 5-7 years ago. The mistakes we probably, or things we're not picking up now, will manifest themselves 5 years or 7 years. So we'll look at the figure, which in some areas shows improvement, in some areas increase in the levels of ill health in the mind, but it really reflects what happened 5 or 7 years ago. And then we get annual medical reports. Because you're running ahead of me. We're getting annual medical reports. The legislation requires mine operators to report annually to the inspectorate, and doctors need to put in there what they've picked up, what are the trends relating to health, and what control measures are they putting in place. And from those reports, we've drawn out some figures, the next slide, which helps us to see what is happening in the health and safety arena. The ABC there tells us if there's a lot of people under A, it tells us that more people are exposed to high levels of dust. So we don't want high figures here. B is medium exposure and C is low exposure. And the figures we're getting from the report seem to indicate that when it comes to airborne pollutants, less and less people are being exposed. In fact, I think when we compare it with last year, this figure was 15%, and now it has improved to 5%. And the total figure that B was 26%, and it's gone down to 3%. And we can see when you put in control measures, in some areas you can get immediate change and improvement. And that's what we see on the mine environment, the hygiene side of things. If things are not right here, you're bound to get people ill later years. Next slide. The following slide talks to noise, because noise is a big problem in the mining industry. And in fact, here, last year it was 6%, and we can see it's gone up to 12%. And I think the problem is around mostly in platinum. So a lot of people are in the medium category, and we'd like to improve these figures to really get less and less people exposed. And the challenge with noise underground is that you are in a confined environment. It's not like in surface where noise comes, you know, it's really confined and it becomes a serious problem. And there's clear targets that have been set, silencing machines, using protective equipment to make sure that there's improvement in this area. And I think when the council makes its presentation, it will cover the health research program that is undertaken to address this challenge of noise. Next slide. Occupational diseases that we pick up from the annual medical report. It looks at the 2 years. This first cluster of graphs gives us the totals of 2005-2006. And that purple, the purple color, is pulmonary tuberculosis. And generally what we can see there is that when we look at the 2 years, there is improvement. The levels going down. Also when you look at silicosis, but they are very high figures. I mean, we're talking about 2006, close to 2,000 cases of silicosis in a mining industry. And as I say, these occupational diseases reflect what happened 5, 7, 9 years ago. So that's why on the hygiene side, we're really pushing hard to get less and less people exposed so that we don't have this problem in the future. And remember, with diseases, it's a huge social cost because people claim compensation and all the, they lose their ability to earn income, and it imposes a lot of cost on money that would have been spent elsewhere in a developing economy. So those are the figures. Generally, we see the downward trend, but there's a problem there. I think that one is, no, it's silicosis, yes. That white one, we can see there that there's an increase. And Dr. Makwe, I think it's what picked up at autopsies. When we seem to be seeing an increase in silicosis cases that are picked up at autopsies. Next slide. On the health and wellness program, there's an HIV AIDS tripartite committee that is chaired by the minister, and it really brings the industry leaders together with the minister, and this committee is looking at what can be done to align the sectoral activities in the mining sector with a national HIV AIDS strategy. And we had a summit, and at that summit, before the summit, some work was done to understand what is really happening in the mining sector with regard to HIV AIDS. And I'd like to share a bit of information. Next slide. That survey has indicated that about 70% of the mines that have responded to this survey, 70% of them have an HIV AIDS policy in place. And 56% of the mines have a budget set aside to deal with HIV AIDS issues. 70% have a program, information and education on HIV AIDS, counseling and support 57%. And maybe the worrying thing where a lot of work needs to be done is in the area of home-based care. As we know that our miners, some of them come from far rural areas. So when they are ill and they go home, we can see only 24% of the mines have home-based care where they look after mine workers even they have returned home. Medical care center, 46% of the mines that responded. Voluntary counseling and testing, 45% are testing. And if we can improve this figure, then it really gives us an understanding of what is happening in the sector, and it can really inform policy direction and what needs to happen. Next slide. Let me see. There's mines that have ARV programs, 35% and 42% STI service, and TB treatment, 44%. On the prevention side, because these slides cover the broad themes of the HIV strategy, the prevention, research and monitoring, treatment and care, and support. So on the prevention side, all the mines that have the policy and a program have a prevention program in place, as we can see there, and are 65% offering dispensers condoms. And I'm just looking at key issues. Next slide. Accommodation, which is a big problem with the old established mines. We can see there 43% of the mines that responded are focusing on dealing with this issue of accommodation, moving from hostel into family units. And 35% of the mines still using hostel, family units, I think 24%. Next slide. On the treatment, care and support, mines that comply to international standards, 42.7%. These details will be on the slide. It really gives good information of what is happening in this area of health and awareness programs that are taking place at the mine. Medical aid schemes, and I think also there's a problem here. The survey that sort of picked it up. Some workers will have medical aids, and if those medical aids are exhausted, then they won't necessarily be able to access treatment. And I think these are areas that we, from a policy perspective, need to be looked at and see how we can strengthen and support these initiatives. Next slide. Now, the next two slides really focuses now on the inspected and what are we doing to try and improve what we do, continue and improve on what we are doing. Currently, I think I reported last year that the nature of health and safety work is very difficult without having proper intelligence or information that guides you in setting priorities and knowing where the problems are. And for many years, we worked on a paper-based approach, which is really problematic given the scope of work that we have to do. I mean, in this country, we have over 700 registered mines. So getting information in a database where you can access it quickly, know where the problem areas are. So currently, we're developing a national mine health and safety database that will be consolidate all this information and make it easier for policy development and really understand where the problem areas are. Audits and inspections, it's been an issue that's been in the media seriously, and currently what we're doing, we're looking at our audit approach, developing clear audit methodologies to cover the key risk areas, and there's currently a draft following the president's call for conducting an audit, health and safety audit at mines, which the minister is currently looking at, and immediately after that, we will follow through and implement it. And currently, from the inspector's side, we've taken a view that you know, you can have good legislation, if you're not enforcing it, it doesn't really help. And we've taken a firm stance where if an accident happens or an inspector goes to a place and he sees that there's clear negligence, we stop the operation until those places are fixed. And I must report that since we started that exercise, I think it was in March, the beginning of this year, we've noticed improvement already. Because at the end of July, for example, we were already 26 more fatalities than we had in the previous year. And since we've forcefully moved forward with that approach, we've seen things turning around. In fact, the end of September, we were 2 fatalities less than what we had last year. So this year, we're starting to see an improvement in how things are going. Yes, levels of fatalities are still high, but we can see already improvement because of the firm stance that we're taking in addressing this problem. And we've started discussions with other law enforcement agencies, you know, the police, around issues of explosives. We're talking to the Justice Department to see how we can align our work and processes to make sure that where there's clear negligence is dealt with and people are take responsibility for their actions. Next slide. And one of the sections of our act, inspectors are able to recommend fines to the mines where they see that a mine is consistently neglecting health and safety prescriptions. They recommend fines, and the mines have to pay those fines, and that gives us another area where we can drive health and safety performance. On the occupational health side, we're busy reviewing the TB policy to align it with a national TB strategy. As we have seen in the occupational illnesses, that TB, silicosis, also related to TB, is posing a problem in the industry. So we're reviewing the policy to make sure that these things, conditions improve. And we're collaborating very closely with the Department of Health. Next slide. And lastly, I'd like to talk about health capacity in the health and safety branch. Last year, I reported on our plans and three interventions, looking at bursary schemes, looking at internship or learnership in the inspector to build capacity, and continued education for the inspectors and improving their ability to carry out their mandate. And what we've done, given the resources we have, currently we've sent four officials on an advanced management development program. We have 23 historically disadvantaged individuals or learners who we put through a mining academy where they are getting experiential training, and once they've done that, we'll absorb them into the inspectorate. They've started with their training in the different disciplines, engineering, hygiene, mining, just to make sure that there's a feeder, because we've had a lot of problems even recently with the changes in the industry. We've lost a lot of inspectors going into the mining industry. And then we have seven bursaries allocated to students who are studying, and bigger percentages of that bursary is female students to try and address the gender imbalance, particularly on the engineering side. So we have students at Vets University and at Pretoria University in the mining and engineering profession. So those are the interventions on training. Next slide. And this slide gives the program performance. Page 9 to 12 of our annual report gives a detailed program performance and areas where we've reached our targets. Here I've highlighted some of the key areas where I think we really need to make improvements, but we couldn't reach the targets. Inquiries 59% of the, instead of 80% that was set in the target, and it really related to capacity internally, and also investigation 75% in terms of 80, compared to 80% of the target that was set. But page 9 to 12 gives details performance of the branch, and the vacancy rate 21%, given the complement of 326 on the branch, vacancy rate of 21%, it says we're running at 69 vacancies at any one time. We advertise in some areas and we're not able to attract people to come and fill their positions, and it shows the demographic profile as it stands currently. Next slide. And then in conclusion, our focus area going forward, because really if the inspectors will continue to be able to carry its mandate, to me, we need to focus on capacity development currently. Recruitment and retention, training and development are very central to what we should do now if we are going to continue to be able to reach our mandate. Knowledge management, I've spoken about the database development, focusing on the quality of our audits and inspections, and we're currently developing clear policies and procedures. I mean, last week I went to England to specifically look at their models and what they are doing, and they've got clear policies and procedures for every little work that the inspectors are undertaking. And I think it generally improves the levels of compliance when people know what are the standards and what they need to do. And then we've spoken about enforcement. We will continue to be very tight on enforcement to make sure that we are able to maintain the current improvements that we are seeing in the health and safety arena. And in conclusion, historically, when you look at health and safety performance in South Africa, historically, there is improvement. When you look at the snapshot, yes, it may seem that things are going bad. When you look at 1987, our industry used to kill close to 1,000 people a year. 10 years later, in 1997, our industry was killing around about 500 people a year. And currently we have 200 a year. It's still a high figure, but we need to continue to work to bring these figures down and really reduce fatalities that we see in our mining industry. And with those words, I'd like to conclude, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the press, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll be doing a presentation on the Management Safety Council annual report for 2006 and 2007. The vision for the Management Safety Council states that it's there to provide a regulatory framework and climate conducive to safe and healthy working conditions for mine workers and communities affected by mining. And the mission statement for the council states that it's there to facilitate sustained improvement of occupational health and safety at mines through focused research, development of policy, advice and effective legislation, and the provision of guidance to achieve best practice and a pervasive culture of health and safety. The presentation will go as follows. Firstly, there will be an overview, and I'll look at the profile, the structure, as well as the health and safety research area. That will be more of an introduction on what the council itself was established to do. And then secondly, I'll go through the strategic objectives and what has been achieved by the council. And then lastly, we'll look at the financial statements. In terms of the profile of the Management Safety Council, the Management Safety Council was established under the Management Safety Act. That is Section 41. In the Act. And the council is composed of the tripartite stakeholders, that is namely representatives from government, labor, and the employer. And in a nutshell, the mandate of the council is there to advise the Minister of Minerals and Energy on occupational health and safety, and then secondly, to review, develop, and recommend legislation to the minister, and I'll talk about that later on. And then thirdly, to promote health and safety in the mining sector. And then fourthly, is to advise on health and safety research in the mining sector. And then lastly, to liaise with other bodies concerned with health and safety issues in the mining sector. And then the structure of the Management Safety Council is as follows. Like I said, the mandate of the council is there to advise the minister on health and safety in the mining sector. And the council consists of the Management Safety Council consists of three permanent committees. The first one being the Mining Regulations Advisory Committee, and its main responsibility is to develop legislation in form of regulations and guidelines. And then the second permanent committee is the Safety in Mines Research Advisory Committee. And its main responsibility is to firstly identify research based analysis for the sector. Secondly, is to develop and monitor a research program. And then thirdly, is to communicate the research outcomes to the mining sector. And then lastly, they also determine the levies that are raised in the mining sector. And then the last advisory committee is called the Mining Professional Health Advisory Committee, and its main responsibility is to determine the health policy for the mining sector, and they also circulate health information. And similarly to MREC, they also develop health regulations, and they're also very key in providing research input into SIMRAC. And then lastly is that the Management Safety Council has got two governance committees.
The first one being the Audit and Risk Committee, and then the second one is the HR and Remuneration Committee. And over and above is that the Council Office has got an Administration Office, which is there to provide the financial systems as required by the PFMA, and they also provide management and administration support to the different committees, and they also do a lot of communication and liaison in the sector. And then this next slide will just give us a brief overview of the research program that the council is overseeing. And as Mr. Gass mentioned in his presentation, that they've got challenges in different areas. And what the council does is that it takes that information and analyzes that information, and then we've got a research program based on the accident trends, based on the accident trends and occupational exposures and the diseases that have been mentioned in the previous presentation. And then the focus areas in terms of our research program currently is that we're focusing on the falls of ground, which account for about 28% of the accidents in the sector. And secondly is the seismicity and rock bursts. In fact, the combined, that is the falls of ground and the rock bursts and seismicity facilities account for about 28% of the fatalities in the sector. And then thirdly, as it was mentioned, that there is a significant increase in the transportation systems and national accidents, and that currently accounts for 28% of the accidents. And then lastly is what we generally term as the general accidents, and that accounts for 44% of the accidents. If I can please just complete the presentation, and I will come back to the questions later on.
It covers slips and falling of objects. Just like when people are just moving, maybe in a haulage, and there's water, and they slip and fall. But it's just you can't group them as fall of ground or machinery. It's a number of things that we just call general accidents, like slips.
So let's go back to this. The falls of ground, the rock beds and the transportation and the machinery, you know what I'm talking about. Now, if you think hard, you think that will constitute less capital. You can't capitalize it. So, now the 44%, it's only
water, I don't know where water falls from, but you know whether it's water, I don't understand. You see, this in terms of safety and the exposures to diseases become critical. So we must know what it is.
If I can answer, on page 93 of the annual report, there's a graph there that details what is under general accident classification. Page 93. So it will be fall of material, rolling rock, manual handling of material, slip and falling, burning, scalding, splinters, inundation by drowning, dust, gas fumes. Those all in all constitute what we just call general. Because if we classify them separately, they account for very small percentages each. That's why we classify them as general, but we put a separate slide to detail what it covers.
Phase 93.
Yes. Those are the details under general.
Continue the presentation. And then the second area of focus for the council is the occupational diseases. And the area that we look at is the first area that we look at is silicosis and the noise induced hearing loss. And what are the operations on the mind that are normally responsible for these occupational exposures and diseases? Those are namely your drilling and your heavy earth moving machinery. And what the council tries to do is that we need to address these problems and get engineering solutions to these problems at source, rather than promoting people to wear protective equipment. And then also, as mentioned in the previous presentation, that also TB is quite a huge challenge in our sector. And if you look at the mining environment, that is very easy to transmit TB from one person to the other. And that is also mainly due to the fact that most of the employees in the sector are living in hostels. And also the underground environment is normally a confined area. So that also leads to the transmission of TB easily from one person to the other. And then lastly, we are also doing further research on HIV and AIDS to understand what are the effects of people that have got either TB or silicosis and are also HIV positive. And then the next section of my presentation, Chairperson, I'll be looking at the strategic objectives. Firstly, what are the key issues? And then secondly, what has the council do to address those issues? Firstly, it's the achievement of the industry milestones as set at the 2003 Mining and Safety Summit. And I must emphasize, the Chairperson, that this was a significant paradigm shift for the sector, from accepting fatalities and occupational diseases to say that these can be eliminated in our sector. And the mining sector has committed itself to the elimination or achieving zero fatalities and injuries, to the elimination of silicosis, and lastly to the elimination of noise-induced hearing loss. And what are the interventions that the Mining and Safety Council has embarked upon? And again, this is means and ways of finding solutions to the problems that our mining sector is having. And the first one is the rock bed management program. And we have budgeted, last year we spent 5.8 million in terms of research. And by research, I mean both fundamental and applied research. And then secondly is the elimination of rock falls. And the council spent 1.5 million on research. The third area is transportation and machinery. And the budget for that was 8.7 million. And then on the elimination of silicosis, the budget was 8.7 million. And then lastly, to baseline the exposure levels of employees in the mining sector, the budget for that was 3.4 million. And then the total spent there was about 31.1 million. And And then the next strategic objective for the council is to promote and drive a legislative review. And the key issue there was the developing of legislation and the condition of the review of the legislative program. And what has the council achieved in the last financial year is that we finalized the 5 regulations, and then secondly, and those were promulgated, and then secondly, that 9 regulations have been completed, and those are waiting to be promulgated, and also 5 guidelines for a mandatory code of practice have been completed. And the only outstanding work that will be finished in this current financial year are the 4 generic topics. And then the third strategic objective of the council is to advise the minister on mining health and safety issues. And then the first issue that we had to address was the rockbed and seismicity accidents in the sector. And if you recall, that the minister last year requested that the mining sector must hold a mini indaba on seismicity and rockbed. And then secondly is to review the state of health and safety in the mining sector. And what has the Mining and Safety Council done to that effect? Firstly was that in September this year, we held a mini indaba on rockbed and seismicity. And then the minister put forward a few challenges that the mining sector needs to address. And one of those key challenges was the prediction and to determine the location of the rockbed and seismicity. And the Mining and Safety Council currently is busy drafting a report that will be submitted to the minister. And in that report, we have defined the 6 priority areas and the action plans that the sector will have to embark upon to address this problem in our sector. And then secondly, that earlier on this month, the council also held its biannual Mining and Safety Summit. And the theme for the summit was working together towards zero harm. And similarly to the mini indaba, we'll also be drafting a report that will be submitted to the minister. And then the fourth strategic objective for the council is to advise the minister on mining health and safety issues. And the issues that we have looked at is TB, HIV, and AIDS. And again, the major issue there is that the prevalence rates of TB in our sector are still continuing, as well as that our sector has got a high prevalence rates of HIV and AIDS. And what are the interventions that the council has embarked upon? The first one is that we have recently finalized a research program on HIV and AIDS. And it was sort of a very sort of preliminary research project. And some of the outcomes out of the project, the council needs to do more to understand the effects of HIV and AIDS in our sector and on our occupational diseases. And then secondly, is that it's very important that we have good and effective case-finding tools to be able to detect TB as soon as possible so that those people can be put into the necessary therapy. And also, last year, the minister also launched the Tibela TB project in the mining sector. That was done, I think, around about October last year. And then the fifth strategic objective of the council is that it's there to promote and facilitate development of a preventative culture to drive the health and safety agenda. And what are the key issues there is that the council has developed and implemented a promotional strategy for improved health and safety awareness. And what are the things that the council has done in the last financial year? The first one was that the council approved and implemented a communication plan, and these are the areas that talk to the communication plan. The first one was the written communication. The council has distributed books, booklets, and information packages. Secondly, is that the council publishes a quarterly newsletter, and we distributed about 4,000 copies to the sector. And then lastly, is that the council also distributed a 10-tick guide on health and safety strategies, and some of the points that were raised in that guide was just to ask the mining companies if they've got a health and safety policy, if they appointed their health and safety representatives, and so on and so forth, just to highlight a few things. And further work that was done by the council in terms of communication was the distribution of more than 800 informative CDs and DVDs. And some of the major events that were held by the council was the Mine Safety Expo, which was held at Orkney last year in November. And then we also exhibited at the NOSHCON conference at Sun City. And thirdly, that we had the HIV and AIDS Tripartite Summit, which was held in Randburg. And then lastly, also that the minister launched the Tibela TB project in October last year. The next two slides will be showing the achievements that have been obtained by the different mining companies. Again, I want to stress that there are good performers in the mining sector, and there are those mining companies that are performing poorly, and the council has got a system of recognizing those mines that are performing quite well in the mining sector. And then firstly, is that the first award is for the ultra deep gold mines and platinum mines, and the mine that performs significantly well is the Playfor Expert gold mine, which is owned by DRD. And then for shallow deep gold mines and platinum mines, that award went to Fairview gold mine. And then for the coal mining sector, Greenside Colliery had the most or the significant reduction in the accidents. And then for the other mines, it was Atman Manganese. And then this slide also shows the mines that have achieved at least 1 million fatality-free shifts. And then in the gold sector, 8 mines in the previous year achieved between 1 and 9 million fatality-free shifts. And in our sector, one employee at work constitutes a shift. So it's easier for most of the gold mining companies to be able to achieve the million fatality free shifts because of the number of employees that they have. On average, some of the big mining gold mines have got employees between 4,000 to 6,000. So as you can see, it's relatively easier for the gold mines to achieve as compared to the other mines. And then the platinum mines, we say about 21 platinum mines achieving between 1 to 5 million fatality free shifts. And then in the coal mining sector, there are 5 mines achieving between 1 and 5 million fatality-free shifts. And then lastly, in the other mines, 3 mines achieved between 2 and 5 million fatality-free shifts. And then on the last objective of the council is that it's there to ensure effective and operational Mines and Safety Council office. And the key interventions that the council has embarked upon is that recently we appointed a consulting company to review the functioning, the business processes of the Mines and Safety Council. And then, please go back. And also to make sure that our functions also talk to the structure of the Mines and Safety Council. Okay. Chairperson, the next slide talks to the governance of the Mines and Safety Council. And last year, the council received a qualified audit report. And I just highlight what were the problem areas that were experienced in the council. The first reason for a qualified audit report was that the Auditor General was not happy with the control systems in the Mandate and Safety Council. And by the control systems, I mean some of the accounting systems that were used internally within the council. And some of them were the bank balances and reconciliations. The next issue that was raised by the EG was the way that the council was managing its property, plant and equipment. And some of the things that were raised by the EG was that the way council determined the useful life and the residual value of its assets needed to be reviewed. And then secondly is that as the different companies undertake research on behalf of the council, some of those companies acquire assets, and those assets need to be correctly reflected in the fixed asset register for the Mandate and Safety Council. And then lastly was the matter of emphasis, and this was mainly related to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And again, Chairperson, I'd just like to reiterate that even though the council had a qualified audit report, there was no fraud or any theft that were experienced by the council. And I think it's important at this point just to highlight a few things that the council has embarked upon to make sure that come the next financial year, we don't get another qualification from the Auditor General. Firstly, is that we have appointed a consulting company that is there to review the structure and the functions of the council. And then secondly, is that we are currently updating the accounting systems and software in the council. And then lastly, is that we are also updating and maintaining our asset register. And then lastly, in terms of the council's financial report, is that in the last financial year, the council posted a surplus of about 4.4 million. And then in the previous year, we also had a surplus of about 4.4 million. And then in terms of the operational budget, the research account was 43.1 million, and in the previous year it was 37.6 million, and we had an increase of about 15% based on a year-on-year comparison. And then in terms of the research expenditure, is that we spent 34.6 million, and then the previous year it was 29.4 million. Now that should be now the research work that has been completed. And then in terms of the administrative budget, last year we spent 5.7 million, and then the previous year it was 5.1 million, and the increase there was about 12%. And then the administration account consists of the fiscal funding and funding from the research levies. The state funding was 4.4 million. And the levy funding was 5.7 million, and the increase in terms of the state funding was 5%, and from the levies was 12%. And then the total budget for the office was 12.8 million. And then the administrative fines account, that is the fines that are imposed by the mining inspectorate to the industry. Last year we received about 600 million, which is similar to the previous year. And then the expenditure last year was about 300,000, and the year before that was about 600,000. Thank you, Chairperson.
Agreed on the format of reporting, and I think there was a bit of a miscommunication, which I think would be corrected in the future. But do we have any questions or want to comment? Okay. Let's start the site. Ma'am, material. Masara. Comrick. Mutsualeji. And Mutate Shmid. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I just have got a little concern about the HIV and AIDS. Because you were saying that people are living in hostels, and that is the reason why this HIV and people are staying far from the hostel. They are living in the rural areas. So I just wanted to know, are these people aware of being infected? And what does the council do to inform the family? Because when really people are going up and down, in and out, I don't think that we will really, this country will be able to combat HIV and AIDS. Because they go home, they plant it, they come back. Is there any follow-up that is done for the families back at home? The other one is with the silicosis and tuberculosis. Especially silicosis and the dust that they gather in. It's a previous thing. Some of them are 7 years already with the disease that you just got now. Then I just wanted to know, how long do you follow those people up after? They don't work anymore. Is there any follow up of the people who are unable to come back to work, or who have been dismissed, or so on? Is there any follow up that is done today? Let me just stop. Thank you.
Yes, thank you,
Chairman.
My question would be on the problem of first one on the sense of middle age achievement, which is on page 9 of the report, where America, we've got under the reduction of public risk exposure, where as a measurement, it would be the percentage of mind with public risk management. But it doesn't say about implementation thereof. Because one could have a strategy, but if it is used, if the percentage of mind and strategy is used as a measurement, the effect will be sidelined, which is what is very important. And the second one is the present issue, where it was giving us the analysis, evidence that taking contribution. What we've got on the handout is not talking to what we've got in the annual report. If you look at page 92, and compare that with what we've got in the presentation, there is a discrepancy, maybe it should just be explained from the number of reports, the 328 and the 44, which doesn't give you the 100%. But if you look at the annual report, you can get the 100%. Just so that people could get some clarity. I think there's one that is not supposed to be there. I'm sure the, that has been mentioned. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. So if you looking into the audit general's report, you get worried, because if the books and the comments the audit general give here, this whole entity must look after the safety of people in the mine. And accordingly to the audit general's report, there's a lot of problems. It makes you actually worried, because it's actually the first time in many years, if I'm not wrong, mistaken myself, that this kind of report coming out from this entity. First of all, I want to ask, how many senior managers left the department, and if so, what is the reason? Because somewhere I saw here in that book, I think it's here in the back somewhere, I saw that one or two of the senior managers, the post is still stuck up. How much did the entity pay out in performance bonuses? How much did the accounting officers and the other senior managers receive as performance bonuses? Are these rewards in line with the entity's service delivery performance? Thirdly, I want to ask how many disciplinary matters were outstanding at the end of the financial year? How many of these matters were older than 2 years? Older than 2 years, a year, and 6 months, and 3 months. What is the entity doing to ensure the speedy conclusion of these matters? Okay, and then the auditor in general talking about wasteful expenditure of more than 600,000 rand. I just want to know what is this wasteful, because I tried to read on point 3.3 in this green book, but I can't really understand what is this wasteful. Wasteful expenditure. Say, further on, the Auditor General says this entity lost almost 25,000 rand just because they didn't pay the account on rent, because they paid it late. They paid a month later, 2 months later, they lost about 25,000 rand. That's you. I mean, somewhere someone didn't do the job, so that's why there's something wrong there. There was something else. Sorry, Jared. I must tell you, but I must make some mafia moves. Well, what is the reason that the company who ordered the books last year they was asking 581,000 rand, this year 408 rand. Is that the reason the books is very bad? Because we're using another company or a better company or a more user company, and we're paying less money, but now we can see on the report the books is, there's something wrong on the books. Why is the royalty income last year it was 289 million, this year is 252, so that's a decrease. What is the reason for that? I will stop here, otherwise I'll go on until tomorrow. Thank you, sir. If you read this green document, there's a lot of problems in this document. Honestly.
honestly, Chair, and you see, there's a lot of problems. I mean, that's the first time last year this report wasn't so bad. It makes me worry because this entity deals with the safety of people in mind. And if the book of this entity is not right, it means they're concentrating to make sure everything at home is fine. But no one is going out to make sure the safety of people is controlled. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my impression, I guess.
Yeah, my chair, I wanted to raise 10 questions, but it's unfortunate that my colleagues have dealt with some of those questions. What we are waiting for is only some answers, maybe. Chair, mine is related to these workers, mine workers. That what happened to these mine workers who lost their lives while they were on duty? The other one is related to those workers who happens to be disabled while they were doing their work in these mines. Are you also looking after their welfare? Or do we have a program in place maybe to deal with some of the issues that I'm raising here related to the welfare of these mine workers who lost their lives? Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, on my handout, I missed the four slides relating to the HIV program. I'd love to have a copy of those. I don't know why it was missing, but it's those four slides relating to that program. Then, you know, it might be my lack of knowledge, but that's why I'm asking. The mine, the Chief Inspectorate of Mines, they're not audited separately by the Auditor General. I take it because there's no reference made, so that's fine. Then, I'm not to be honest, I do, especially after the recent incident, would like to see not only percentage, but also real figures. You know, it's good to say that fall of ground, there was no real, there was a 4% decrease and a 12% increase, but you know, I would like to see figures. It's figures which talk. And it also relates to, sorry, that was on the Inspectorate of Mines, but it also ties up with the Mine Health and Safety Council, because, you know, page 6 there, if you look at the page 6, it also just refers basically to percentages. You know, percentages you can do anything with, but it's the figures which count, and I understand that the workforce has decreased, and therefore it's per million hours worked, and therefore you set the trend. But within that trend, I think recent events have necessitated that you indicate the figures. How many people have died of rock fall? How many people have died due to slippages? How many people have died? Because then, in our minds, we're not statisticians. We can see why 25 people, for instance, slipped. I mean, something must be wrong, because that gives us a better impression as to what the issues are. So, from my point of view, I think you are adhering to the requirements for annual reporting. But I'm not so sure whether you're adhering to the requirements of your oversight function to this committee to indicate exactly what the full extent of, especially where fatal injuries are concerned. Because injury is an injury, which should not happen, but fatal injury, I think, should be reported. And with due respect, if 200 people died on a mine, we would like to know how many people died of, let's say, seismic activity, how many people died of rockfall, and if possible, you know, more detail relating to that. Because then only can we really say we know, have the full picture. So that's basically more a request. And if you look at page 6, the accident clarification, you have fall of ground, rock burst and seismicity, transportation system machinery, and general. That accounts to 128% if you add that all up. So I'm not sure what. I get the impression if I look at the your annual report, fall of ground versus rock version says necessity should be 28%. You shouldn't have duplicated that. That's my short. But it is too broad. It is just too broad. You know, general, I think the remark was made by the chair, anything is under general. And I take page 93 explanation to more detail, but I would like more detail than that detail in page 93. I think that's the issue. And then I'm concerned about the 4 million rand profit or surplus you have. There shouldn't be a surplus. Because the surplus, if I understand, is usurped by the Treasury. Well, it's probably usurped by the Department. And then if it then has a surplus, it's usurped by the Treasury. So you should not have a surplus. You should have a 0.001 cent left over the end of the year. But 4 million rand out of your total budget is too high in my view. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, I think it goes back to the perhaps how we perceived the preparation of this meeting and how we would have wanted the responses thereof in terms of your presentation. The issues around finances, for instance, generally you would say that it would be important to get both from the council and the inspectorate whether you are confident that the money spent to you is of value. That would include both what you were able to utilize and what we are not able to utilize. That will relate to the whole issue of health and safety. So that's one area, broad as it is. But we have key customers, and yours are the workers and people who are at the receiving end on this section, particularly on health and safety, and emphasizing on that. And what would you think is their feelings? What is their perspective on your performance? Because at some point, would have to find a way, members, to interact with the stakeholders, the workers, their trade union movements, and so on, so that we get this kind of thing. So I'm saying let's respond to these questions which have been asked, and make a further effort over and above this, and over and above the responses we are going to be giving, to structure your input in such a way that you use the format, as we said, the balanced scorecard format, which will be taking into account on what members have raised with you here, so that if perhaps we have, because my colleague here has threatened that see if we give him opportunity, will take us until tomorrow, you know. Now that's a very long time. I don't think we'd want to be here until tomorrow, but if we really follow here, we would have to comment on each and every page here, and that's not ideal. That's not what we wanted to do. For instance, we will talk about events and activities, fine, but what is the assessment of those? And what is the output out of that process? See, you can call a conference, convene Indaba, have objectives. What becomes important, how do you measure that? That's That's what would be important to us as a way of reporting. So I'm making that as a way of illustrating to you that it would be advisable that we follow this particular trend in reporting going forward, so that we are able, you know, not to go back. Other things are fine, you know, it's okay to have the mission, it's okay to know the mission and vision. It hasn't changed for the past what years. But these are the things, these major areas about finances, areas about the people, stakeholders, the people you're dealing with, you have tried to deal with the issues of skills development and training and so on. Even though there was a specific question we asked about MQA and MQA programs. I'm saying these are the specifics we wanted you to deal with, so that we minimize any further duplication. But let's get a response from you and perhaps call it a day.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll take a number of I'll give answers to a number of questions, and my colleagues will fill in where I missed the gap. But I'd like to take full responsibility for the format of the report, and I think in the future we'll structure it in a format that's requested. Because the figures are there in terms of actual numbers and stuff, and when it's very clear, we can be able to put those figures instead of talking to percentages to clearly reflect what is happening and what are the changes happening in the industry. And just starting at the bottom, the customers, how do our clients perceive what we are doing? If I can touch on that, because I made a comment that health and safety is a very sensitive area, and sometimes comments that are made, maybe in the media or by individuals, also depends on a lot of other things that are happening at that particular time. But we're working together as both the employees, the employers, and the state. And quite frankly, as I outlined the functions and rights that's delineated in the law, employees, when they pick up situations, they need to report. I've already looked globally. Inspectors always suffer with the question of reach, outreach, being able to cover all working places. It is always a resource challenge. And this way of working closely with labor representatives and employers, it certainly also helps us, because one of our ways the way that we work is we get complaints and we act on those complaints, we investigate them. So we're certainly working together in that area, and as we've seen the work that is taking place at the council, we have the full support of all the three stakeholders. On my left here, it's Patrick from Free State, who is a regional representative of NAM in that unit, and Faisal from the Chamber of Mines, Dr. Andera. So the stakeholders are very fully engaged in these processes together. Just going back to the question of the 4.4 million surplus, this figure, and Mr. Zondi will comment on it. Often it relates to interest that comes, or research, you know, managing research is often a big problem. I mean, these things fall, researchers are not able to complete the research in a particular time period, and that money is lying there, it's accruing interest and all that. So that money relates to research projects that are not really, that are not completed. But the treasury doesn't take the money, we are able to use it even in the following year if it's there. And then on the service delivery measures, on the service delivery measures, we've reviewed our strategic plan as it is. Now, this report covers 2006 and 7, and effectively we've looked at what we are doing and really putting actual figures. I think our report in the coming year, in terms of figures and in terms of actual outcomes from our activities, it will be much more sound and much more clearer. It's something we've looked at the beginning of this year, and we've really streamlined it, which I think will be very useful for the committee, and will liaise very closely in preparing the report for the next year. Dr. Maku, I think, will help me on the HIV/AIDS silicosis follow-ups that we're doing. And I think David will assist us with the classification. And Tokozi will help us with some issues raised on the Auditor General's report of the Council.
On the issue of silicosis and the TB follow-up, I would like to say that there is follow-up that is being done, which is covered in terms of Occupational Disease in Mines and Works Act, where mine workers have to undergo examination every 2 years. This is under the ambit of the Department of Health through the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases. So I would like to say this issue is covered. And then the second issue of HIV and AIDS, where people are living, where it is, it wants to find out what the council is doing about those people. I would like also to address that issue.
I think if I omit something, Dr. Randera will fill me in, but. What we can say is that HIV and AIDS, declaring to the next person other than the individual, is actually a challenge, because currently as we speak, it has some ethical issues. So the law currently doesn't allow any sitting doctor to expose the status of that particular individual other than themselves. But I think through the VCT program, which is to empower the worker and also support structures, I think it's a challenge, but I think it's being addressed. I don't know if I've kept that with this. Ethically, we cannot inform families about an individual HIV.
Okay. And if I can just add on this question, so mines run this voluntary counseling and testing, so employees volunteer to do testing, and in that way we can get an understanding of what are the prevalence levels. But often you'd find that not every employee wants to go for those VCTs. But that's the work that's going on. That's why in the presentation I really said if the voluntary counseling and testing levels can be improved, I think it was at 45%, then it gives us a much clearer picture of what is happening, and it can inform policy decisions. But we know the national legislative framework places certain restrictions on how this should be done and the ethical issues around that. So we really depend on the willingness of employees to volunteer and go on this program.
Chairperson, I would like to respond on the question that was raised on the classification that I showed. It was on slide 6. The different classifications are shown as percentages. And I must say that the falls off ground and rock persons as you see the accidents, both those two categories account for 20%, not individually, both of them. And if you have to convert that into the number of fatalities, that would be approximately 56. And then the transportation systems and machinery, that accounts for 28%. And that would be about also 56 fatalities. And then lastly, the general accident, which is 44%. That is about 88 fatalities, based on a figure of about 200 fatalities. And then there were also a number of questions that were raised regarding the Mothers and Safety Council financial report. Again, if I can just reiterate by saying that the council has taken a holistic approach to solving this particular problem. And in September this year, the council has appointed a consulting company that will assist us in clearly defining the functions that the council needs to undertake, as well as the structure that that will support those functions. And then there were quite a number of questions raised, and I think one of them was the issue of the performance bonus. The second one was the wasteful and fruitless expenditure. In terms of the performance bonus, I'm not exactly sure how much was paid out in terms of bonuses. What I can do, I can commit myself to give that feedback back to the committee. And then in terms of the wasteful and fruitless expenditure, I'd just like to refer the committee to the relevant sections of the report. And that is on page. I just get to the correct page. But the first issue was related to the fact that the council paid a research agency to do research on its behalf before they had provided the council with the deliverables. And that the council has taken the necessary action against that particular company. And as we speak, we have instituted a legal proceeding against that company to get the balance of the money, because they paid a portion of the money, but for some reason they have withheld the balance. So the council has taken the necessary action against that particular company.
If I can just come in there just to clarify also, because what happened, CSIR was doing research for us, but using a facility in the U.S. And then they paid monies in advance because they needed to secure the research facility in Utah, in the U.S. And the USA last year, January, had this major accident where miners were trapped underground. So that testing could not continue because they were using it for their own research. And the monies haven't been committed there. They took some money to say this covers the administrative costs and whatever. So the Auditor General was not happy with that sort of arrangement, and he said that those monies must be recorded as fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
Issue of the impact that we're having on the employees in the sector. Again, I'd like to reiterate that in September this year, we held the meeting dialogue on drop person seismicity, and some of the priority areas that have been identified in that endeavor was that the council needs to investigate the possibility of establishing an agent that will clearly focus on drop person seismicity. Because I must say that currently, if you look at the research environment, there's a lot of fragmentation. So one of the options that the council is to look at is the integration of the research agencies. And then secondly, the issue that was also addressed in the Minindaba was the issue of legislation. Do we have sufficient and effective legislation to be able to address this particular problem effectively? And again, as the outcomes of the Minindaba is that the council will have to do a thorough review of its current legislation to address this particular problem. And then lastly is the issue of capacity. is that does our sector have enough people to be able to manage this risk in our mining sector effectively? And again, all of those issues will be addressed in the current financial year.
And here's something probably which I think that the committee needs to take note of. It was a question of, do we include it in this financial year or not, related to all these problems around finances. And there was a complaint against the former CEO, and a forensic audit was conducted, disciplinary hearing, and there were problems, and then eventually the council, with a view of the matters which came out in the forensic audit, sort of parted ways with the former CEO, and that's why currently Mr. Thomas Zondi is acting there at the council. But because it was finalized in this year, it wasn't clear whether we would capture it in the report. But I think it's important to take note of what happened, because it gave context to some of the issues relating to finances.
Thank you. Gentlemen, ladies, thank you very much. Until we meet next. Meeting is closed. Thank you.